It's to the best of our knowledge. Today, political correctness. I'm Anne Strainchamps, and here's a scene that might be familiar. You're at a party, talking to somebody you just met. Everything's going really well. And then you ask what seems like an innocuous question, maybe about favorite restaurants or music or where they're from. And then it starts that terrible inner monologue. Did that question sound racist? Was it racist or sexist or homophobic? Should you apologize? Or would that just make it even worse? By the time the evening's done, you're so exhausted, you just want to go home and curl up in bed. So we've all been there before, right? Afraid something we said offended someone or could be misinterpreted. Some people would call this sensitivity. Others call it political correctness.
It's exhausting. I mean, I quote a lot of other writers who talk about how exhausting the rules of PC are, how draining it is, how it drives people out of the movement and causes them to stop being political. So in that sense, it's quite self-defeating.
Jonathan Chait is a staff writer for New York Magazine, and he recently published a takedown of political correctness that caused a real stir on the internet because he sees PC being used as a tool to silence debate.
I saw a movement in certain parts of left-wing culture that has been resurgent in the last year, year and a half, after having been mostly dormant, that reminded me of the political culture I experienced in college in the early 90s, which was also a moment that went away fast. So I wanted to define and explain what was going on and make an argument to liberals that they shouldn't be celebrating or participating in this movement, but should oppose it.
So you're talking about a community on the far left and a kind of language in which people are incredibly sensitive to linguistic usages or arguments that strike them as not just the big ones, racist or sexist, but, you know, heteronormative or there are other terms.
Right. It's a lot of sensitivities, you know, race and gender being the main ones, but like you say, not the only ones. But I think the focus on language is a little bit misleading because the rules and norms of these communities use control of language as a way of controlling ideas. And that's the real purpose of this. It's not just to change the terms that people use, but to restrict the possibility of debating deep assumptions, to make real debate impossible.
For example?
The first example that I begin the piece with was, ironically, a very mild humor column by a student at the University of Michigan named Omar Mahmoud, who was ironically lampooning PC culture itself. He was pretending to take enormous offense as a person of color, which he is, at, I think, an imagined incident in which a white person helps him up and he realizes that he's being oppressed for his left-handedness. It's a kind of college spoof, but it's a very mild, gentle form of humor. But his editors said he was creating an unsafe atmosphere at the paper. His dorm room was vandalized and attacked. And a lot of people on the left seemed to persuade themselves not that he was being victimized for his ideas, but that he was victimizing them. He was the one who was creating, you know, an atmosphere of fear and who was making it hard for other people to go about their daily lives. And this is very typical of this movement. People think that the expression of ideas that they disagree with is it's an offense. It creates, to use the phrase that they often use, it violates safety, which basically means where ideas challenging PC thought aren't expressed at all.
That's interesting. That reminds me of a piece I read recently, I think maybe in the Chronicle of Higher Education, about the rise of trigger warnings on college campuses.
And that's absolutely a related phenomenon. So trigger warnings represent an idea that people will be traumatized by coming across uncomfortable material. And this can be defined very, very broadly. I talked to some academics, and I've read some academics who basically think that this phenomenon has gotten so widespread on campus that they legitimately fear any uncomfortable or difficult discussions, including kinds that used to be very commonplace as of a few years ago, because then they'll be accused of creating an uncomfortable or traumatic environment for their students.
So why do you think the new PC is back?
That's the great question, and that was the hardest part to answer because that's something that you can only really answer in a speculative way. One theory is that we've seen a new generation that was raised by helicopter parents who cleared their path of anything difficult. Mm. Another explanation is that social media has made this possible, because social media has its own innate characteristics that I think have really allowed this movement to flourish.
Well, social media and internet culture in general just kind of breeds intolerant discussions.
It breeds intolerant discussions. It brings together people who are like-minded. It encourages the spread of outrage and shaming, which are an important part of how this movement operates. And it allows people to create in virtual form what you could only have in physical form 25 years ago. You could have through social media these communities of people with identical far-left views.
Mm. There's a Facebook group that you write about that kind of exemplifies this sort of political correctness. Tell me something about this Binders Full of Women Writers.
It's a Facebook group for women writers, and I think it has a very laudable purpose. The purpose was to create a networking social organization for female writers to exchange ideas. And not only is there nothing wrong with the formation of this group, it's a very good thing that this group formed. But like a lot of groups that have some kind of left-wing center of gravity, there's a kind of rule with many organizations. This is actually a sociological principle that's been observed in the past, that people who lean towards one form of view will not converge upon the center of that point of view, but will progressively move towards more and more extreme versions of that view. So there quickly developed these norms of discourse, which is this extremely high level of sensitivity on identity questions. Now, everyone there was female, but not everyone was traditionally female. Some people were trans and some people were different kinds of categories that are sort of between male and female. And of course, you had racial cleavages. So you started having, you know, regular PC-style call-outs, where basically you're accusing someone of bias.
Followed this one comment thread that just by the end had degenerated into angry messages in all caps with some members calling others racist.
Right. And so basically, to sum up the debate, and it gets very inscrutable very fast, but someone made a routine comment about how you deal with call-outs and uses the phrase POC and WOC. And one of the writers made a joke saying, I'm a WWG woman with glasses. And then someone else made something about some like gluten-free Jew type comment, you know, making sort of lighthearted jokes about the acronym terminology in these messages, which were a little bit unfamiliar. And then first people started saying, oh, you know, why are you making jokes and belittling my message? And then they kind of fed off of each other. So they went from being irked to angry and from angry to being outraged. And after a while, they were talking about this as if there was a hate crime. And literally someone in all caps was talking about it, likening it to a burning cross being placed in the group. That's how much it had violated their sense of what was allowed. So I used this discussion to show how debate within these communities is prevented in a very frequent way. And I think this wasn't an outlier. This was just something that I'd gotten a hold of. But this is how a lot of PC dialogue goes these days.
But there is a point here, though, that at this point, racial and gender bias are so deeply embedded in our language, mm-hmm. our culture, our habits, our basic assumptions, that in order to combat it, we do need to do it at this level of, what do people call it, microaggression. You know, we have to have this minute focus in order to even bring to awareness the subtle level of bias that we all live inside.
It's definitely true that there's widespread race and gender bias embedded in society. I put that in the story. I say that very clearly. I don't agree that political correctness is a way to make it better. I don't agree that it's the only way to make it better, or even that it's a way to make it better at all. I think there are ways you can be aware of the problem. There are ways that you can try to encourage more egalitarianism without abandoning liberal ideals. And that's my argument, is that political correctness fundamentally abandons liberal principles, which is what inevitably leads to these kinds of horrors that I'm describing in the piece.
What's the main damage you're worried about? Is it damage to free speech?
Damage to free speech is part of it. I think it's actually a damage to the communities themselves, because they create these bubbles where meaningful discussion and debate is impossible. And if you are a real liberal, you think that open discussion is necessary in order to arrive at truth. That's the basic model we have from Locke and Mill, that we don't always know in advance what the truth is, and we have to presume that different people have different ideas that can be hashed out in open debate. And if you prevent that, you seal yourself off from important dissent that can identify error. So I think the victims of political correctness are not mostly the people who are shouted down and pushed out, or even people whose rooms are vandalized or whose performances are canceled or whose speeches on campuses are shouted down, even though all those things happen. I think the main victims are the people in the PC communities themselves, who seal themselves off from the outside world and just can't function effectively as a community. But I also think that just as the flare-up of political correctness that we saw in the late 80s and early 90s didn't last very long, I think this one will also not last very long. I think it'll collapse out of its own ridiculousness. And in fact, I think you're seeing a backlash now that you didn't even see 6 months ago. So I'm not pessimistic about the course of this. I think in the end, the liberals are going to be left standing.
Jonathan Chait is a staff writer for New York Magazine.